The life of Moses in this world was a study in trials. He was born at a time of great trouble for his people. We can read of that in Exodus, and we can also read of it in Hebrews 11, where we find that it was by faith that Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they were not afraid of the wrath of the king. So he survived those first months of his life, not by his faith, but by the faith of his parents, because they defied the order of the Pharaoh, the order of the king, which said that every male child born to the Israelites must be put to death. They did not obey that command. We're not told about what other people did, but we're told about what they did. They did not obey that command. They hid their baby boy for 3 months at home. And you can imagine what that was like. Little infant for 3 months to keep the infant quiet, especially when Pharaoh's soldiers would be around. They hid him for 3 months, and when they could not do so safely any longer, they made a little ark of bulrushes in which they set him. And they set that little vessel, which was so prepared that it would float on the water of the Nile River, they set that little vessel afloat, and there the daughter of the Pharaoh, when she came to wash in the river, discovered it. And when she opened the covering of it, the little child, 3 months old, wept. And her heart was smitten. She knew it was one of the Hebrews' children. And she took the child to be her own. And so Moses grew up in the palace of Egypt's king, in the midst of the splendor, the wealth, and the learning of one of the ancient world's most impressive and at that time most enduring civilizations. So enduring that some of the structures that they built are still around today. And then at the age of 40, Moses disappeared from the court of the Pharaoh, fleeing into the wilderness of the Sinai Peninsula, where he became, for the next 40 years, a shepherd. And then when at age 80, most people are thinking about retirement and easier days, Moses received the call of God to his life's greatest work. He was to be the shepherd of the Lord's flock and to lead them from Egypt to the promised land. And during those years, those last 40 years of his life, Moses talked with the Lord face to face. Now, some commentators have objected to the title of this psalm, A Prayer of Moses, the Man of God. They have argued Moses could not possibly be the author of this psalm. But in the Hebrew Bible, the titles of the Psalms are part of the text. When I studied Hebrew more years ago now than I care to remember, and we were working on translation in the Psalms, that is when I realized that these superscriptions that appear above the text in our English Bible were actually part of the inspired text. And the verses were numbered so that the inscription would be the first verse, and what we have as verse 1 would be verse 2. The Hebrew scribes regarded the titles of the Psalms as of equal inspiration and authority as the rest of the text in the Psalms. As Spurgeon pointed out, the descriptions found in this psalm correspond dramatically to the circumstances that befell the children of Israel during the 40 years they spent wandering in the wilderness. The last 40 years of the life of Moses. If we accept the title of the psalm, and there's no reason why we should not, then here is the oldest of the psalms. And there's every reason to accept that the following psalm, the 91st, should be attributed to Moses as well. So in the psalm with which we are concerned this evening, we find the man of God contemplating the works of divine power that led the people of Israel out of Egypt. The message of Moses was that God knew exactly what to do, and he knew exactly when to do it. Not all the people were as sold on that last idea. They expressed their frustrations to Moses. While they were going through the time of the plagues, they said, "Why has God not delivered us? You said he would deliver us. He hasn't delivered us. Why not?" Moses reflected in the psalm that we have read that centuries and minutes were regarded equally by the Lord. The message of this psalm was that there was every reason for the people of God to be encouraged about the days ahead of them when they considered the days that were behind them. When they considered their pilgrimage through the wilderness of this world, as Bunyan put it, then they could trace the hand of God's providence in all that journey. And if they could see that hand in the past, then they had no reason, Moses argued, for concern about the present or the future. Moses wanted more than simply a wistful remembrance of prior blessings. He felt the obscurity of the people of God. There they were out there in the wilderness. No one really cared about them or knew too much about them outside of that people. His concern was that after they were all gone from the earth, along with all who knew them, that for which they had labored was just going to vanish into the mists of history. But it was not the legacy of Moses or of the people that concerned the man of God. It was the legacy of God's work. So Moses was leading the people in this psalm to the theme of hoping in God's help. Hoping in God's help. And wherever you are tonight in your journey through this life, these words present you with the certainty that before you were born, however long you have lived in this world, before you were born, previous generations of God's people, whose circumstances were in many ways much different than yours, lived in the light of the same truth that must govern your life. And what is that truth? God is
And God has spoken.
Whenever you feel yourself at sea, as it were, whenever you feel yourself unsettled by the circumstances of life, it's well to have those words written down somewhere that you can come back to reflect upon them. God is, and God has spoken. Because to deny that fundamental proposition is to plunge into the chaos of the relativism that plagues our society. People around you deny the reality of God, or if they acknowledge that there is a God, they deny that God is relevant. So they argue that all choices in life, regardless of what they are equally good. But if the first words of the psalm do not overwhelm your soul with the thought that God is and that God has spoken, you are in danger of making the same kind of choices that so many around you are making. You have to say tonight that God has been your help in all the ages past. Either the ages of your life, the previous years, or decades, or quarter centuries, or half centuries of your life. God has been your help in all those times. Or in the ages of the history that preceded your life, and of which you are now a part. It's interesting, isn't it, to reflect upon the fact that really, in terms of your legacy, it doesn't last very long after you are gone from this world. When I have visited the graves of my ancestors, I've been struck by that thought, that here are the graves of people that moved in this world. They moved in the area where their graves are now located. That is, they interacted with other people. They did things from day to day. They retired to sleep. They slept. They got up. They ate their meals every day, and so on. And they discussed with people their views about the events that were going on in the world around them. But now, nobody really knows much about them except who they were by name and when they were born and when they died, and by virtue of the location of the grave where usually they were living. So the legacy that we leave is very slight, it's very brief. You have to acknowledge the reality that your life is slipping rapidly away. And that's true whether you are in the what we would call the early stages of life, or whether you're contemplating the closer approach of the end of life. So that knowledge has to lead you to the same petition as the one Moses expressed. You want what you have done to be established. That is, you want to leave behind you a legacy that will lead others to go in the right way. But really what you want is for the legacy of God's work to be established. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter so much about you. It matters about His work. So this psalm confronts you with the truth that God has directed your past, and that He is leading you in the present now, whatever the circumstances are, and that He will guide your future according to His purpose. So the psalm deals with the past and the present and the future. And let us look at it in those simple headings this evening. the past. The psalm begins with a memorable statement. Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Here's an expression of the foundational truth of history. In every generation, going all the way back to Adam, the world's first man, Jehovah has been the dwelling place of his creatures, and especially of his people, with whom he is in the bonds of a covenant. All of history has stamped upon it the truth of the existence of God, and the fact that God is the reason for the existence of creation. We find in verse 2 of the psalm the exposition of the doctrine of God's eternity. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. That verse tells us quite plainly that there was God before there was anything else. Before anything was created. And that text underscores the truth that it was created. Before anything was created, God was. Now notice that in verse 2, the translators supplied the word that brings the truth of God's existence into its perpetual present. At the end of verse 2, thou art God. And that word art is in italics in our English translation to indicate that the translator supplied that word. But the emphasis of the text is that God always is. So the text doesn't say, before all of this came, thou wast God. Before all of this came, thou art God. God is. So any expression of God as being in the past is a concession really to us in the way in which we have to think, because we are finite creatures. We can't conceive of the idea that there is no past or future, but that is how God exists. We have to think in terms of the succession of moments. We are conscious that we had a beginning, and that every moment of our lives has been one in a series of other moments. We think in terms of yesterday. We think in terms of tomorrow. If you want to bring it down into the present day of the week in which we are meeting, we think in terms of what happened earlier. What happened in the hours of the morning. What happened during the afternoon. What we think is going to happen later on. God has no such consciousness. It's hard for us to comprehend. This eternity finds expression in the psalm in verse 4. For 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. So 1,000 years in God's sight are just as yesterday to us when it's over. Now, some people in more recent times have tried to use this text as an argument why one day in the creation week is equivalent to 1,000 years, or maybe even 10,000, or maybe even 100,000, or maybe even 1,000,000, or maybe even 1,000,000,000 years. That's not what this text is about. Let's contemplate what it was that Moses was saying. What was the date 1,000 years ago? It was 1017. Now, 1017 was 500 years before Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the castle church at Wittenberg. 1017 was 603 years before the pilgrims landed at Plymouth along the shore of Massachusetts Bay. It was 759 years before our Declaration of Independence. It was 952 years before the first man would walk on the moon. Now, those spans of time, they're almost meaningless to us. We really can't conceive of them. But God views those long spans of history as we think of yesterday when it's past. All those years are to God as a night's sleep is to us. Sometimes we get up and we think, well, that night was very short. Where did those hours go to? Thought I had a lot more time. And suddenly it's time to get up and get going. God views 1,000 years in that way. So we are in the presence of one in our lives who inhabits eternity. That is, he sees the whole march of the generations at once. Something amazing about the birth of children. When you see the birth of a child, the thing that always impresses me is here is the march of the generations continuing. There's a note in the bulletin about Dr. and Mrs. Cairns. They're waiting for the birth in December, I think it is, of twin daughters to their son and his wife. The march of the generations. So when the people of God look to the past, meaning to their past, or to long past, to the Reformation, to the time before the Reformation, they see the eternal God always there, always the same. So they're not in dismay about it. We identify God as the one who has always been directing our steps in this world, who has always been helping us. And that becomes very important, Moses was arguing in the psalm, when considering the present. And that's the second thing we come to consider, the present, the past and the present. Now we come into the middle part of the psalm, and the middle part of the psalm expresses the reality of what is happening now in the life of each person. It was happening for Moses at that time when he was inspired to write the psalm, but it's happening in the life of each person now. And here is the reality. The reality is that in every generation, we have those, all of those, who are descended from Adam. And the reality of their lives is that they sin. And the reality is that no one can hide sin from God's sight. So the message of Moses here in the psalm is that our days are passing quickly away, and that because of sin, they are being consumed by the wrath of God. So the psalm rebuts the idea that sinners have that they can conceal their thoughts and actions under the cover of darkness and that nobody will ever know. But if we look at the book of Job, we find that Elihu spoke about this very situation. So let's look at the book of Job, chapter 34. Job chapter 34, verse 21. For his eyes, that is God's eyes, are upon the ways of man, and he seeth all his goings. There is no darkness nor shadow of death where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves. So in the psalm, Moses says, all our sins are set before the face of God. Because as surely as God is eternal, so surely is he omniscient. So the message of Moses is everything about this life is transitory. We like to think in terms of that which is permanent. We have a permanent residence. Well, only within certain limits. Because in my life, I have lived in certain places and they no longer exist. They've been demolished. It's something to go to different places and you see, yeah, that's where we lived. And there's no sign of that place. I mean, we have pictures of it, but there's no sign of it anymore. So we can't think in terms of what is permanent. We have to face up to the reality that everything is changing. Now, verse 10 is one of the most famous verses in the Bible, for it defines the generally accepted bounds of human life. The days of our years are 70 years. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Now, Moses lived to be 120. But Moses knew, as he was writing these words, that except for Joshua and Caleb, no one else who came out of Egypt was going to reach very old age. So for the rest of the people, there was nothing but the reality of how brief life is. You think about it. The people who came out of Egypt, who were at least 20 years of age when they came out of Egypt, none of those people entered the promised land. So that means before they were 60, they were dead. And we don't know in every case how far along the line it was. There were some people when they came out of Egypt who were nearly 60 and they died very shortly after. But those who were young when they came out of Egypt, by the time they were 60, they would be dead. So Moses was saying that even those who do live to be 80 years old or more than 80 years old have to confess that there are burdens associated with great age. And what is the point that he's making? It's that we may understand the transitory nature of our lives and number our days accordingly. Then we will be conscious of our need to apply ourselves to the wisdom of God. And if we turn to the New Testament, to Ephesians chapter 5, we find that the inspired apostle makes exactly that point. Ephesians 5 and verse 14. Wherefore he saith, awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Not wasting our days is what he's saying there. Employing those days in the work of God's kingdom. Because those days are passing away. And that leads us to the final aspect of the psalm, the future. So we come down to the last verses, and they are quite memorable verses. Here is the vision of Moses for what was to come. He was saying in these verses that the secret of rejoicing in this life is the operation of God in the hearts of his people. It lies in the desire to behold the work of God and to see that work demonstrated as well in the lives of those who are coming after you. It lies in the desire to have that work of God established for this time and for the time that is to come. And the message of the end of the psalm is that only as God establishes the work of our hands will it be truly established. So we can make whatever provision we want. I think again tonight of my dear brother, Dr. Arnold Hickok, who's now been with the Lord for 26 years now. He spent 34 years of his life in the ministry at Heart to Heart Bible Church, Christian Academy. If you go by there now, there's a housing development. All of the buildings that were there are gone. Mary and I recently drove through there. It's quite a sobering thing to do. What is the message? Only as God establishes the work of your hands will it be truly established. Only as God establishes the work of your hands is there any legacy for succeeding generations. Now, thankfully, in Dr. Hickok's case, there is a legacy because there were people to whom he preached the word who have gone on with the Lord. So can we not desire this evening that God, in the words of Moses, would let his beauty rest upon us and establish the work he has given us to do? Establish thou the work of our hands upon us. What is that work? It is the work that he has given us to do and that he has enabled us to do. So Moses is saying, O Lord, establish thou that work. He repeats it in true Hebrew fashion a second time. The work of our hands, establish thou it. Establish that work. Only God can do that. So that the God who is, and who has spoken, who has revealed himself, he is the God who is our help. He is the God alone in whom we hope. So the one who has helped us in all the days that have passed continues to be our hope for all the days to come. This is the prayer of Moses, the man of God, hoping in God's help, resting upon God's help. So wherever you are in your journey through this life, that becomes your portion. That becomes your testimony. You acknowledge all that God has done to help you in the past, bringing you to the knowledge of the truth if you have come to believe on Christ. And now that this same God must be your hope in all that is to come. Let thy work appear unto thy servants, Moses said, and thy glory unto their children. That is a wonderful prayer. Let thy glory appear unto our children and our grandchildren. I think of my grandfather, who to my grandchildren is their great, great grandfather. And then I think of the generation before his, and the generation before his. So their great, 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 great grandfather, I can take them to his grave. Say, here he was born in 1819, nearly 200 years ago now. And there is the evidence that his life in this world has been over for more than 100 years. What is the hope for those grandchildren of ours? What is the hope for your children and your grandchildren, if there are such? It is that same hope. Only God, only the God who is and who has spoken, can provide the grace and the help you need to pass through the days of this life. I think of that sign that I saw on the home of my parents as I was growing up. It didn't matter where we lived, I always saw it. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. What a sobering thought that is. Yesterday was the 67th anniversary of my mother and father's wedding day. And when I look at the pictures of the joy and the happiness, then I think too that they're both gone. Only one life. Will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. May God give us grace to hope in the God who is our help for all the years to come.